Okay, we're going to start here 12 lines up on the bottom of Lamed Tet Amud Bet. We're going to be quoting the Mishnah now in the Machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel argue about exactly how much of a Tana and Hoda'ah you need in order to get to Modeh B'Miktzat. We had the position of Rav, which is you need Kfirat Tana Shtei Kesef. The Shtei Kesef that are mentioned in the Mishnah are the size of the denial, not the size of the claim. And therefore, you need a hoda'ah of a pruta. If you put them together, then the claim was shtei kesef plus a pruta. The other hand, Shmuel believes that the shtei kesef that are mentioned in the Mishnah are the tana, the claim itself, not the denial to the claim. So the denial can be a pruta less than shtei kesef. So that's their machloket as to when the shtei ma'ah or shtei kesef that's mentioned in our Mishnah, is that the size of the claim or is that the size of the denial? And the Gemara has been going back and forth with regards to their position. We saw that the Psukim seem to support Shmuel's position better, though the Mishnah seems to support Rav's position better. And now we're going to quote from our Mishnah. Tnan, shtei kesef, yesh li biyadecha, makes a claim that you have two kesef, ein lecha biyadi ela pruta. And the response of the defendant is, you only have a pruta, patur. There is no shvuat, modeh b'miksat. My time up. What's the reason there's no shvat modeh b'miksat over here? La mishum dechasra la ta'ana. For Rav, this would be very supportive of his view. The failure here is that you don't have a kfira. You don't have a denial that is large enough to be chayav in modeh b'miksat because the claim here is two kesef, but the denial is not two kesef because you only have two kesef minus a pruta as the denial. B'tiyufta de Shmuel. And that would be a strong refutation of Shmuel's position. Amar lecha Shmuel, misavart shaveh ktani. You think that part of the Mishnah is speaking about value? Davka ktani. It's speaking about the actual item itself. So we discussed this when we discussed the Mishnah on Friday, that there is a difference when you come to claim for coins. You could be claiming currency, which means that you're claiming the value of what the currency represents, or it could be that you're actually claiming the actual coin itself. In their day, the coinage was made up of different metals, different quality of metals, and therefore you could be making a demand for that particular item. So now the reading that we have is that it's shaveh, that it was speaking about currency, and the claim is fine, and so is the denial and the admission. All are working in the same category, which is currency. The failure, according to Rav, is that you just don't have a big enough claim with a big enough denial in it. If you read the Mishnah that way, it's a big problem for Shmuel. Shmuel's retort now is, you're reading that part of the Mishnah wrong. Failure in that part of the Mishnah is not the lack of Tana and Kfira. The failure is that the claim and the admission have nothing to do with each other. There's a claim for Shtei Kesef. And then there is an admission with regards to a pruta. The pruta is a copper coin, and the shtei kesef are obviously silver coins. If you're speaking about value, that's fine, because then they're in the same category. But if you're speaking about the particular item itself, dafka, you're making a claim for these two particular items, and then he's denying it and saying, I owe you a pruta, then they're speaking about different things. And then, ein hoda'ah miminatana, or ein kfira miminatana, that the denial or the admission are not of the same category as the claim, and then it's not modeh b'miksat. So that's what Shmuel says is the failure in this part of the Mishnah. Mashe ta'ano lo hodelo, what he claimed against him, he does not admit to. Mashe hodelo lo ta'ano, and what he's admitting to is not part of the claim. Iochi, if that's the way you're going to read the Mishnah, ema seifa. What are you going to do with the latter part of the Mishnah? Shtei kesef upruta, ishli biyadecha. You owe me two coins of kesef plus a pruta, einecha biyadi ela pruta. You only have a pruta's worth. He admits to the pruta. Chayav. Again here, for Rav, if you read it simply as being about value, that it's the currency's value, then these two pieces of the Mishnah make a lot of sense. In the first case, the failure is you do not have a denial of shtei kesef, only a claim of shtei kesef. In this section of the Mishnah, you have a denial of two kesef. The claim is for two kesef plus a pruta. He admits to the pruta. There's still a denial of shtei kesef. And for Rav, it works well that's the difference between these two lines in the Mishnah. For Shmuel, it says we're speaking about currency, dafka, which means that the claim is for something in particular, and the denial is about another item, and therefore they don't match up. then what are you going to do with this piece in the Mishnah? The next line in the Mishnah, which says it does work, over there it says shtei kesef pruta, and then it says if you deny the shtei kesef and admit to the pruta, that's good. But according to him, it wasn't about value. It was about the particular coins. So why does the admission land you with the modem mixad here? If you say it's about value, mishum halchi chayav, that's why you're chayav, because of Rav's statement. Now you have a admission in currency and a denial of shtei kesef. If you think that it's written as it is, meaning the object itself is what the claim is for, amai chayav, mashitano lo hodulo, umoshahodulo lo tano. The claim has nothing to do with the admission. The admission has nothing to do with the claim. Wait a minute. We're trying to explain this Mishnah according to Shmuel, and Shmuel Ashitato works out over here. We're going to spend more time on this later today. But Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Ta'ano Chitim V'Se'orim. If he makes a claim for both wheat and barley, V'Hodulo Be'Echad Me'em, and he admits to one of the two types, then Chayav, according to Shmuel, that is considered to be Modem Mimikzat. See later today that there is an opposing view of Rabbi Yochanan that believes that when you have Chitin and Se'orim, and you admit to one of the two items, we don't look at that as being a whole claim involving these two items. And then when you're modeh b'miksat, you agree to half of it, that's modeh b'miksat. We, according to Rabbi Yochanan, bifurcate the two claims. There are two claims here. There's one claim for wheat, there's a claim for barley. If you admit to one, then you are admitting to all of it. And when you deny the other, you're kofer bakal, you're denying the whole thing. Shmuel believes that when you have these two items, we aggregate them into a single claim. And therefore, if you deny one and admit to the other, that is a case of modem mixat. And in that way, he'll explain the Mishnah that way, which is that the shtei kesef pruta is a claim of two types, but we aggregate them into a single claim. And then when you admit to one part and deny the other part, you have a case of modem mixat. So Shmuel b'shitato can explain the Mishnah, where it says, achenami mistabro. This explanation of the Mishnah makes sense. Mikutani seifa, because we have later on in the Mishnah, it says, litra zahav yeshli b'decha. You have this weight of zahav that you owe me. Ein decha b'yadi yela litra kesef. The response is no. I only have that weight in silver that I owe you. Patur. There he is patur. Iyamart bishlamo davka k'toni. Over there, if you say that we're after the particular item, which is it's gold versus silver, he's making a claim for gold, and the other person is answering him in silver, shemachi patur. That's why there's no modeh b'miksat over here, because you don't have a hoda'ah that is mimina ta'ana. The claim and the admission have nothing to do with each other. Eliyah mar tshaveh, if you're saying that everything's about value, then the claim is for a litra zahav worth of value, and the response is, I only owe you a litra kesef worth of value. But that means that they are a subset of each other. The litra kesef, even though it's a different metal, it's not about the metal itself, it's about the value represented by that weight of metal. So if you say it's a weight of gold of litra, that's what you owe me, and the guy says, no, I owe you a weight of silver, then again, you are making an admission that is a part of the claim, and why wouldn't you be chayav then for modem mixat? Amai patur, litra tuvahavi. When you're speaking in litra, then you're speaking about a larger number. It's just about gold weighs more than silver. And so you're just talking about a bigger number, and he's admitting to a smaller number. That should end up with modem mixat. Ella, may the seifa dafka, reishanamid dafka. The latter part of the Mishnah is clearly speaking about a claim for the particular item, which is the zahav, and he responds in kesef, so they have nothing to do with each other. That's the case, then the reisha should also be cases where it's dafka, and that's only according to the way Shmuel explains it, not according to the way Rav explains it. So leima tabi tiyufta derav. Well, now if you explain the Mishnah that way, then it should be a refutation of Rav's position, because now it makes it sound like the Mishnah makes more sense if you say dafka. Amrach Rav. Rav will respond and say, Kula matnitin shaveh. The whole Mishnah is speaking about value. And therefore, in the first part of the Mishnah, the failure is that you don't have a sufficient denial, because you don't have shtei kesef in the denial, and that's why it doesn't end up with modem b'miksat. In the latter part of the Mishnah, it's speaking about value, and that's why you do have a modem b'miksat. But what do you do with the case of litra zahav? The litra zahav, shiny. That case is different. Teda, the katani seifa, dinar zahav, li biyadecha. Ein decha biyadi ala dinar kesef, vitrisit upundion upruta, chayav, shekol min matbea achat hein. So here we have, in that later part of the Mishnah, which is the seifa, even further down in the seifa. Again, we discussed this on Friday when we discussed the Mishnah. But in that part, there's a claim for dinar zahav. And the response is, no, I only owe you a dinar kesef. Or, the way Rashi reads it, it's or I owe you a trisit, or I owe you a pindion, or I owe you a pruta. In all those cases, we said chayav. So it's clear there that that case is speaking about shaveh, currency. It's about value. And that's why it's considered to be shekol min batbeachat. All coinage, all currency is considered to be one because they are representative value, not about the particular coin. So that would be, according to Rav, the easiest explanation of the Mishnah. But that also shows you that litra zahav is different. Because if you were making a claim for value, then dinar zahav, dinar kesef, we show you that that is considered to be currency and value. Litra, once you start speaking about weight, that's a different category. That's not currency anymore. That's speaking to the particular item and not to the currency. And so for that reason, Rav says, the beginning of the Mishnah is about shaveh, is about value and currency. The end of the Mishnah is about value and currency. The only exceptional case is litra zahav. But that's because you expressed it differently. You didn't express it as a coin. You expressed it as a weight. And once you start expressing something as a weight, you're definitely focused on the metal and not on the value that you are speaking about. And therefore, if you speak gold and the response is in silver, you're speaking about different things. And that causes you the problem, according to Rav. So, Iyamar Bishlama Shaveh. If you explain that last case in the Mishnah, when we're speaking about all the different coins, that it's speaking about value, Shemhachi Chayav. That's why you have Moda B'Miksat. Eli Amar Davka Amai Chayav. If you say that it's literally speaking about the coin, you're asking for that particular coin, then why should there be a din of Moda B'Miksat? And that will be Rav's explanation of the Mishnah. Again, Rav's explanation of the Mishnah in general seems smoother, because Rav across the board says the Mishnah is speaking about value, with the exception of that one case, which is Litra Zahav. Because there he switched the way that he made the claim and the response. It was in weight rather than in value. As opposed to that, for Shmuel, Shmuel makes the claim that Litra Zahav governs the whole Mishnah. Litra Zahav shows you that he's specifically speaking about a particular item, and therefore the response fails, and that means everything else in the Mishnah also is Davka. Everything else in the Mishnah is about the item and not about the value. But then Shmuel's going to have to explain this last case over here, which is the coinage case. In the coinage case, the Mishnah says chayav, that you are chayav from Moda B'Miksat. According to Shmuel, if everything's dafka, then why does it work in that last case of the Mishnah where he makes a claim for dinar zahav, and he responds, no, I only owe you a dinar kesef. So Shmuel will have to explain that. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, bishit ta'ano b'dinar matbeot. So Rabbi Elazar says, I'll explain to you that last piece of the Mishnah in the position of Shmuel, which is, there, the claim is not for a dinar zahav in particular, but rather it's saying, so Rashi claims that dinar matbeot means vua b'matbeya tsura, that is a minted coin. And what the chiddush of Rabbi Elazar is here, is that all minted coins are considered to be a singular category. If you look in the Balei HaTosafot, he says, perish bakuntris, tavua b'matbeya tsura, v'lo tano mishkal. As opposed to speak about the weight of the particular item that you are asking for. Even though the one coin is silver, the other coin is copper, because they all are considered to be a single minted coin. Baal Tosafot asks numerous questions on that, and then come around and say, Alkeini Rala Fresh, Bitoano Dinar Matbeot, Shonatano Nidar Lachlif. That he gave him a coin to exchange for other coins. And now he's asking for those coins that he exchanged the item for. Oh, trisit, oh, pundion, oh, pruta. And the other guy says, I gave you the exchange. I gave you back the coins that you asked for, with the exception of whatever coin it is here that I still owe you. And that would be the motive of Miksat. You owe me this many coins that would add up to a dinar zahav. Dinar Zahav is giving you the totality of the number of coins that you owe me. You can pick it. So, Dinar Kesef. You owe me Dinar Kesef, but you owe me a Dinar Zahav's worth of Dinar Kesef. Meaning that that's the number of Matbeot. But again, it's considered to be Minatana, because according to the Baal Tosafot, the claim and the denial are about the same coinage. It's a conversion that took place, and now he's demanding the payment for the conversion. The guy says, I gave you the conversion already, you're just missing that coin. And therefore, there is hoda miminatana, not like what Rashi says, that the minting itself makes them into a singular category. So that is moda b'miksat. The guy's making a claim for 24 dinar kesef, which make up a dinar zahav, and the response is, no, I only owe you one dinar kesef. That is, Zahoda mimina ta'ana. But kamash malan, that comes to teach you du pruta bichlal matbeayita. That a pruta is considered to be a coin. So now, that is somewhat of a difficult statement because why wouldn't you consider a pruta a coin? Pruta is a type of currency. It would possess you to say that, oh, all of a sudden pruta is not a coin. So the answer to that is that pruta, as opposed to other coins, is first of all in copper, not in silver. That's number one. Number two is it was usually the smallest form of currency that was traded. And sometimes they were so small that they were not minted. They were just circles of copper, and they were not properly minted, or they wore down very quickly. We see that in the Mishnayot and other places, that the copper was problematic to hold on to because it deteriorated much faster than the silver. So you would a lot of times want to consolidate all your copper coins into a silver coin in order so that they don't deteriorate. Because if you held on to copper coins rust or decay, and then they lose their value because the size of the coin is diminishing quickly or faster than a dinar kesef or zav. So therefore, a pruta, in some senses, has a different status or is different than the remaining coins that are traded. And for that reason, you might have thought that pruta is different. And the Mishnah's chidush is that all of these coins are all considered to be a type of currency. Currency that can be exchanged one for the other. And that's why Shmuel says that there, the hoda'az miminatana dekanami. I can prove it to you, diktani. Because the Mishnah, in describing that case, says shekol min matbeya achat, saying that all currency, all coins are considered, or all minted coins are considered to be one item. Shekol min matbeya achat, Rashi continues with an explanation like he did before, which means that the Mishnah implies that a copper coin is a minted coin like the other coins. The only problem with that, and why many of the Rishonim don't like that, is because we already learned that because one of the cases in the Mishnah is that he was hoda bipruta, that he admitted to a pruta. And you can see that in the Tosafot. He says, v'taima dachmeina mereisha. That which Rashi explains over here, we already know from the statement before that a pruta is one of the admissions over there. So that information is given. You don't need the Mishnah to say, kol min matbei achat, to teach you that. The Tosafot does not bring an answer to that question, but the Ritva does give an alternate explanation, which is that we break down a claim and an admission to its component parts. We don't look at the story that surrounds this situation, but rather about what underlies the claim here. So for instance, if an individual comes and says, you owe me money because I deposited the money with you, and the other individual comes along and says, no, I don't owe you a pikadon, but I did borrow money from you, and I owe you half of that that I borrowed from you, that we will deem that to be a modeve miksat, because underlying those two claims is a claim for money from the pikadon and an admission to a part of that money in the admission. Even though their stories are different, the context is different, that's still considered to be a singular claim and admission, or where the hodah is miminatana. And similarly in our case, over here, even though the claim is deriving from a particular type of coinage, and the admission and denial have to do with a different form of coinage, if we look underlying the whole thing, they're making a claim and an admission about the same type of coinage. Yes, he exchanged the type of coin up front, and the other guy says, I only owe you this money. But in the end, they're speaking about the same type of coinage or the same issue. And even though the admission does not accept the claim surrounding the claim, but if they admit to the substance of the claim, that that's considered to be an admission. V'rav, she'akol din matbe'achat. Rav says it doesn't mean that all coins are considered to be one category, but rather that they all have the status of the same category. For Rav, it's the coinage has the same status because they are representative of value. It's not because coinage or minted coins are all considered to be one category, and any coin you use, doesn't matter whether it's silver, gold, copper, it's all one category. That's the way Shmuel or Rebbe Lazar is explaining it for Shmuel. But for Rav, he's just going to say that it's not about the coinage or the minted coins. They're not all one category. It's about value. They represent value. And therefore, all coins have the same status, din matbe'achat. They're like one coin, not because they are all minted, but because they represent that value. For Rabbi Elazar, since he answers or explains the latter part of the Mishnah like Shmuel, reishanami kishmuel sirele. Let's assume that he also holds like Shmuel in the reisha. And now you'd have Rabbi Elazar backing up the position of Shmuel, that the problem in the Reisha is because it was Dafka and not because you failed in your denial. And that means that the Mishnah would be only about a claim of two kesef, not about a denial of two kesef. Mar says, lo, Seifa Dafka Ktani. No, Rabbi Elazar believes that Seifa is speaking about the particular item. Shakol min matbeachat, because all coins or minted coins are considered one. Reisha Karav Okushmuel. And the Reisha, he has no bias. He can explain it like Rav, he can explain it like Shmuel. He's not biased in that way. It's interesting over here, the Ramban just points out that why is the Gemara asking this about Rabbi Elazar? Why is it so compelling to say, just because Rabbi Elazar answers or explains the latter part of the Mishnah for Shmuel, that he holds like Shmuel? We have all over Shas, we have Amoraim answering for each other, or trying to explain them, but it doesn't mean they necessarily subscribe to that position. Why is the Gemara here convinced that Rabbi Elazar all of a sudden subscribes to that position? We said Rav Ashi answering on behalf of Shmuel. So why don't we say that Rav Ashi holds like Shmuel? Gemara never makes that claim. So Ramban says you have to look carefully about how the Amora is speaking. If the Amora is coming to explain another Amora or Tana's position, and they do it in the context of the Machloket being visible, which is that they know about the Machloket, and now they're trying to explain one side of it or help one side of it out so that they don't get dismissed because of the question we asked. In that case, we're not going to assume that that Amora necessarily subscribes to the position they're defending. They're just helping us in the back and forth of the Gemara. On the other hand, if you have a statement like Rabbi Elazar, which is just a blanket statement, not in the context of a Machloket, over there you start to wonder, why is he making such a statement? It turns out that he helps out Shmuel's position, and he's defending Shmuel's position, but his statement wasn't made in that context. The statement was simply made about our Mishnah. So that, maybe, we would start to think that Rabbi Elazar really believes that that is what it means in the Mishnah. If he does that, then he's subscribing to Shmuel's position. That's what the Ramban points out, how this is different than other instances where Amoraim explaining a Mishnah or a Braita or an Amora's position. Over here, Rabbi Elazar makes a statement without any relevance to the machlok between Rav and Shmuel, and that's what makes us think maybe he subscribes to Shmuel's position. The Gemara in the end rejects it and says you don't have to say that. Tashma, dinar zahav zahuv li biyadecha. So here we bring a Braita. The way Rashi explains it is, perish dinar zahuv hainu tavua. That is a minted coin. I have a minted golden coin that you owe me. Ein l'chabi adil dinar kesef. But the response is, no, you only have a silver coin. Chayav. That you consider to be moda miksat. Taima damalei zahav zahuv. The reason being because he said zahav zahuv, which means that it was a minted coin. Ha astama, if it were not for that, shaveh kamarle. Then we would assume that it was about the value. This is a tosefta. But taima yishum toko min matbeya echad. And the reasoning in this bright or this tosefta will be because they are all minted coins. Havilei min hatana. And they're all one category. That is exactly the way Rabbi Elazar explained our Mishnah. When he explained the Mishnah about the coins in the Mishnah, he explained that they're all minted items. And since they're minted items, they're all considered one category. Now you see in the Tosefta that it's not the case. When you specify that it's a minted coin, Zahav Zahuv, which is a minted coin according to Rashi, that's when we say that min matbeachat, that everything is considered to be one item because they're all minted coins. Implying that our Mishnah, where he did not say that, he said Dinar Zahav. He didn't say Zahuv, he left out the word minted. That means that in the Mishnah it sounds like that it's not about the minted aspect of it, but rather the value aspect of it. And therefore that sounds like Rav, that the Mishnah's explanation is about value, and that's why it's considered to be Hoda'a miminatana. And in the Bright or the Tosefta, the reason is because, not about value, but about the fact that they're all minted items, and therefore they're all considered to be one category. So Amar Rav Ashi, so here we have Rav Ashi, which I noted before, who defends Shmuel's position, and we don't ask, does Rav Ashi hold like Shmuel? Because Rav Ashi here is clearly addressing the question in the context of the machloki between Rav and Shmuel. It's not just an independent statement. He knows there's a machloki here, and now this bright or tosefta is problematic for Shmuel. So he's coming here to defend Shmuel's position. Achi kamar, kol omer dinar zahav, ke omer dinar zahav zahuv domi. So it's Gailu a Chasurei Mechsera, we see this many times, as if he's explaining the Braita to say that whenever you say Dinar Zahav, it's the equivalent of saying a minted golden coin. If you do that, then the reasoning behind our Mishnah is about it being minted coins are all one category and not about value. Tani Rabbi Chiya L'Suyei D'Rav. We have a Braita from Rabbi Chiya that is in support of Rav. Sela Libi Adecha. You have a sela that you owe me. Ein lecha b'yadi el sela chaser bet kesef. You don't have a sela. You have a sela minus two ma'a kesef. So again, the translation is not as important. A sela is the equivalent of a shekel in the Torah. There are four dinar in a sela. There are six ma'a in a dinar. That means that there are 24 ma'a in a sela. So he's making a claim for 24 ma'a, and he responds to him and says, I owe you 22, not 24. That means the whole da'a, the admission is at 22, the denial is 2 kesef. Chayav, that's motiv b'miksot. Chaser ma'a patur. On the other hand, if he says, I owe you 23 ma'a, and I don't owe you that last ma'a, patur. That sounds exactly like Rav. Over here, the denial must be at 2 ma'a kesef in order for it to be a motiv b'miksot. When it's only a denial of 1 ma'a, it's not motiv b'miksot. For Shmuel, it shouldn't make a difference. For Shmuel, it's all about the claim. The claim here exceeds 2 kesef, 2 ma'a kesef. That should be fine. And the hoda'a, as long as it's a pruta or more, you're fine. Here you have a admission and a denial, and the denial is a ma'a. Ma'a isn't far in excess of a pruta. That's 32 prutot. So he has a fine denial over here, and according to Shmuel, that should have been a motiv b'miksot. Yet it says in the Braita, patur, which is supportive of Rav's view, that the shtei kesef in the Mishnah is about the size of the denial, not the size of the claim. Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, Amar Shmuel, lo shanu ela b'tanat malveh v'odat loveh. All of this that we're speaking about b'motiv b'miksot involves a party who is a creditor and a party who is a debtor. The creditor is making the claim, and the debtor is denying a portion of the claim, admitting to a portion of the claim. That's your classic case of motiv b'miksot, and that's where you have these thresholds, whether according to Shmuel means the minimum claim must be tuma akesef, or according to Rav, the minimal denial must be tuma akesef. Either way, that's speaking about a case of a creditor, debtor, claim, and denial. Aval, tanat malveh, when you have a tana of the creditor, vadat aid echad, and then you have a single aid backing him up, afilu lo tano ela pruta, there, even if the claim is only the size of a pruta, chayav, you are chayav. So here, they're differentiating between different reasons you can result in a shvuah. There are different shvuot deoraita. One shvuah deoraita is motiv b'miksot. What Rav Nachman Yitzchak just told us in the name of Shmuel is that motiv b'miksot is about a creditor-debtor relationship, a malveh v'odat loveh, and so therefore you have that relationship that generates the motiv b'miksot and has all those thresholds that are mentioned in our Mishnah. There is another way to end up with a shvuah d'oraita, and that is an eid echad. The single eid comes and testifies on behalf of a creditor, saying that the money is owed. The debtor has to take a shvuah to offset the statement or the claim of the eid echad. What Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, the name of Shmuel, is saying over here is, that doesn't have the minimum thresholds of our Mishnah. A pruta of claim would work in that case. So the creditor comes and says, you owe me a pruta. And the debtor says, I don't owe you a thing. Then an eid echad comes along and says, you owe him the pruta. So now you have a monetary claim that is large enough to be dealt with, which is a real claim. A pruta is the minimum amount for a monetary claim. And you have here a claim by a creditor, a complete denial, a kofar bakol by a debtor, and then an eid echad that comes and backs up the creditor. An eid echad can generate a need for shvuah d'oraita, and that's even at the level of a pruta. My taima. What's the reason that eid echad is different than motiv b'miksot between a creditor and debtor? Dichtiv, lo yakum eid echad b'ish, l'chol avon u'l'chol chatat. A single aid cannot sway the case when it comes to an avon and a chatat. L'chol avon u'l'chol chatat hu de'enu kam. He doesn't have any impact on a case when we're speaking about an avon or a chatat. Avol kam hu l'shvuah. But he does have the ability to generate a shvuah. So he's precluded from making a difference or swaying the case with regards to monetary matters. He can't change the outcome of the case. And with isurim as well, or capital punishment, he can't sway the case. The only time he can sway the case is with a shvuah, which is that avon chatat are precluded from his capacities to act as an eid echad, but they are midayek from that avon chatat he can't deal with, but shvuah he can generate. Betanya, kol makom sheshnayim mechayvin oto mamon, eid echad mechayvo shvuah. And here is the principle that is laid out. Anywhere where two edim could force a monetary claim then to be valid, and so too an ed echad can create a shvuah. And we know by two edim, they can testify any minimum above a pruta. As long as it's a pruta or bigger, they can make a difference in the case. They come along and say debtor owes creditor a pruta, that's going to be the binding outcome of the case, because you have two edim backing him up. So if they can cause money to move in that case, then an ed echad can cause a shvuah. And so the thresholds mentioned in our Mishnah are only from modav mixat, when it's between the creditor and the debtor. It's not about a case of an ed echad, and obviously not about two edim, who can move money as long as it's above the threshold of a pruta. Now obviously this parallel between whatever two edim can do and ed echad can do is not exactly always true, as Balei Tosafot point out, lav dafko. It's not exact. Ha'ika kfirat shibud karkaot. By karka, if you have two edim who come and testify, you're going to move the property into the possession of the other party because the edim come and defend or back up the claim of the party. On the other hand, by a shvua, there's no shvua by karkaot. So even though two edim make a difference in karka, one aid cannot make a difference because the one aid's only capacity is to create a shvua, and the karkaot are exempt from shvuot. So that's what Tosafot points out, that it's lav dafka, you have to take it with a grain of salt. Now Tosafot points out over here that the Gemara clearly makes a differentiation between modav b'miksat and ed echad, saying that ed echad can be mechayev shvua in the place where modav b'miksat cannot. And that means that it doesn't have the minimum thresholds. But he does point out that in Ketubot, on Pei Zayin Amud Bet, we say the Einish Bayim Kfirat Shibud Karkot Afilu Badat Eid Echad, that Eid Echad cannot generate a Shvua vis-a-vis Karka. Alma, from there you would see Mishavinan Eid Echad Oda B'Miksat, that there is this correlation between Eid Echad, what he can create a Shvua for, and Modav B'Miksat. So how do you explain that over here it says that they're different, and over there it says they're the same? Ve'esh Lomar D'Shmol D'Hochol D'Tameh D'Mechayev D'El B'Kfirat Pruta. That Shmuel is the Shittato over here, who says that you only need a Kfirat Pruta, and Kfirat Pruta works by Modav B'Miksat, and it's also going to work by Eid Echad. And that's why there's this parallel between them, and then the Tosafot says that that parallel works across the board. And therefore over here, since a Kfirat Pruta can generate a Shvuah of Modav B'Miksat, so too an Eid Echad can create a Shvuah through a claim of a Pruta. On the other hand, by karka, where we find no manifestation of a shvua by karka in modav b'miksat, eid echad will depend on modav b'miksat, and there will be no shvua of eid echad with regards to karkaot. Although Tosafot in Ketubot on Daf Pei Zayin Amud Bet gives a slightly different answer, which says it's not only in the sheet of Shmuel, but rather eid echad can generate a shvua where b'modav b'miksat there is a shvua, but there's a failure because it's the kfira is not big enough or the tana is not big enough. There, since shvua is relevant in that case, eid echad can generate it at the threshold of a pruta. Then when it comes to shibud karkaot, where by modav b'miksat it's mufka completely from the parshia of karkaot, over there eid echad can't come along and be mechayev shvua. So that's how Tosafot in Ketubot deals with it. Although Tosafot in Baba Kama Kuf Gimel seems to think that Eid Echad does require the minimum thresholds against Shmuel over here, and that in order to have a Shvuah in Eid Echad, you would need a claim of Shtei Kesef and Pruta, and in that way he equalizes the situation and says Eid Echad is learned from Modav B'Miksat, both with regards to Kfirat Shibud Karkot, where there is no Shvuah, and as well as by the thresholds that you need a minimum of Etana of Shtei Kesef and a Kfira of a Shavai Pruta. And the Ramban brings an additional item over here, which is that from the Lashon of Shmuel, it makes it sound like you need a full-fledged Tana, meaning that the claim has to be a Bari claim in order for the Eid Echad then to force a Shvuah on the denial or on the defendant in the case. And he brings that from the Rabbi Ephraim, Talmido Shrabbeinu Agadol, Kein Dato. Then he writes, V'Rabbi Rabbi Yosef Alevi, Kach Katav, Shein Nishbayim Pi Eid Echad, Shlo B'Tanat Bari. Rabbam, their Rebbe, Rabbeinu Agadol, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, lo kach dato. Because he wrote in Perakol and Nishbaim, even with a Tanat Shema, an Eid Echad can force a Shfua. And you can see in the same machlok between the Rambam and the Raivud in Ichod Gzela Beveda, Perak Dalet, Halach Yud Gimon, Halach Yud Zayin, where the Raivud both times questions the Rambam's view that you can have an Eid Echad generate a Shfua when there is no Tanat Bari. So it's clear that the Raibid requires a Tanat Bari, whereas the Rambam does not require a Tanat Bari. And he notes, even according to this Deah, an Eid Echad still cannot generate a Shvuah by Karkaot, because Karkaot and Kanas are Mufka from the Parsha of Shvuah completely. Therefore, an Eid Echad cannot generate a Shvuah. In areas where an Eid Shvuah is relevant, but there's some other technical deficit, then Eid Echad can overcome the deficit. That's whether it's Shema, or whether that is that there is a minimum necessity for a claim and a denial, that Eid Echad can overcome. But the Eid Echad cannot overcome is the problem that a Shvuah is never done by Karka and is never done by Knas. And then he adds on something else, which is Shvuat HaShomrim, Ika Plukta Ben Rivuta. By Shvuat HaShomrim, the question is, do you need that minimum threshold of Shtei Kesef or not, by the mode of Mixat? So some require it. Oika Mandamra Lobina and Triat Shtei Kesef of the mode of Mixat. The Svarakama Adifa Mistavra Tvei. He says the first explanation is more logical, to say that just like you require these minimum thresholds by modem and mixat, you also require them by shvuat shumrim. And even though we say erev parshiot, and for that reason we say modem mixat is relevant by milveh not pikadon, that doesn't affect the rest of the pasuk of kesef ukelim, which will be applicable to both shumrim and modem b'mixat. And you can see in the same machloka between the Rambam and the Raivud in Hichud Toin V'nitan, Perek Hei Halacha Tet, where the Raivud questions the Rambam's view that Shvuat HaShomrim does not require a Ta'ana in order to be Chayav a Shvu'ah. Amram Nachman Amar Shmuel, this is coming back to what we saw at the bottom of the previous Amud, that this is the Shita of Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Shmuel the Shita To believes that Ta'ano Chitim V'Se'urim, if you make a claim for both chita and se'ora, behodolo be'achad mehem, and you admit to one of them, chayav. That's classified as modeh b'miksat. So even though there are two different types that are making in the claim, and you basically admit fully to one type and deny one type fully, that's still considered to be modeh b'miksat. We look at it as one claim, not as two separate claims for the different items. Not one claim for chita and one claim for se'ora. We look at it as chita se'ora. And therefore, if you deny half of it, then you are a modeh b'miksat. Amar lo Rabbi Yitzchak Yasher. Rabbi Yitzchak says he's right. He's backing up what Shmuel says. He's giving him a, in the parlance of today, it's a Yasher Koyach. V'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yitzchak says you're right, and Rabbi Yochanan backs you up. Michlal the Poligalei Reish Lakish. From Yitzchak's statement, when he says that Rabbi Yochanan backs up what you're saying, Shmuel, that makes it sound like Reish Lakish, who is the Talmid Mufak and Talmid Chover of Rabbi Yochanan, they're always found together. That means that, why didn't he say Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish agree with you? That implies that Reish Lakish disagrees. So, Igad Amre, Misha Havashoyile, Vishotikle. Some say that Reish Lakish's modus operandi in the Beit Midrash was that he would let Rabbi Yochanan finish entirely before he started to ask questions on him. In the interim, Rabbi Yitzchak left the Beit Midrash. Reish Lakish was sitting there silently, waiting for Rabbi Yochanan to finish. Rabbi Yitzchak, by that time, already left the Beit Midrash. So he has no idea what Reish Lakish said, or whether he responded favorably or negatively to Rabbi Yochanan's statement. He just wasn't around, because it took too long to get there. And therefore he says, Rabbi Yochanan definitely backs you up. Reish Lakish, I don't know. I wasn't there when it happened. Igad Amrei, and some say, Mishta Havi Shoti Lei, that he was drinking at the time. Reish Lakish was taking a drink. Vishotikle, and he didn't respond because he was drinking. So Rabbi Yitzchak, again, didn't know if Reish Lakish's lack of response was because he was drinking, and so therefore he didn't respond, and he would have responded negatively had he not been drinking, or he didn't respond because he had nothing to say about it. He was drinking, but he also had nothing to say about it, and therefore he didn't respond. That's why Rabbi Yitzchak doesn't mention Reish Lakish over here. That's the way Rashi explains it. Just to note that the Rabbeinu Chananel explains that Mishah, instead of being to delay or wait, but rather from the word shilhei, which means to be tired or wiped out. So over here, he meant that's what it's meant over here, that mishalei shilhei means that he was exhausted. He was worn down, and therefore Reish Lakish didn't respond in this case, and therefore we don't know what he really thinks in this case. Mara says, lema misayile. Let's say that our Mishnah is supportive of this view of Shmuel. Tanochitim ve'odolo b'se'urim. Case in our Mishnah, if he made a claim for wheat, and the response is, I owe you barley. Patur. There is no modem mixat here, because the hodah is not mimin ha-tana. Rabban Gamliel michayev. Rabban Gamliel, who we'll get to, believes that you don't need the hoda'ah to be mimina tana, and therefore he says you are chayav from odu b'miksat. Time odu tano chitim v'odu lo b'stilrim. From our Mishnah, the case that is brought is a case where he makes a claim for wheat and admits to barley. Ha, you could infer from that, chitim v'se'orim, had he made the claim for both chitim and se'orim, v'odu lo b'echad mehem, and then admitted to one of them, chayav. Then even the chachamim would agree in that case you are chayav, because that would be classified as modu b'miksat. Because otherwise, why didn't the Mishnah mention that case as the case where the chachamim and Rabbi Gamliel argue? If they argue in the case of chitin v'seorin also, then mention it. Why do they only mention the case where it is chitin and he admits to seorin? That implies that that's the only case where they argue. Mara says, lo, hu adin, afilu chitin v'seorin nami potur. The chachamim also believed that when you made a claim for both chitin and seorin, that you would be potur. And there would be no more demiksat. V'hai de kamiflige b'chitin. So then why did the Mishnah only mention the case where he makes a claim for chitim and the denial is sorim? So diacha kocho derabban Gamliel. To give you the power of Rabbi Gamliel, to show you how far Rabbi Gamliel goes. He believes that you don't need the hodah mimina tana, so far as to the fact that even if you make a claim for wheat and the guy admits to barley, he calls that modeh b'miksat. That is the extent of Rabbi Gamliel's position. That's when it comes to teach you the hodiacha kocho de Rabbi Gamliel. Now the Baal Tosfot would ask, why don't you give us the other side and say that's going to teach you how far the Rabbanan's position goes. So he says, the kocho odif. Rabbi Gamliel makes more sense here to show how far his position goes. The milta de Rabbanan avi koach de patur. Because the chachamim are making you patur. Rabban Gamliel over here is making you chayav to take a shvuah. And that means that we're not worried about a shvuat chinam. We're not worried about shem shamayim levatala. We're forcing you to take a shvuah. That's how far Rabbi Gamliel's position goes. So over here, the bigger chiddush is to say you are chayav a shvuah, not that you are patur from a shvuah. It's more natural to say you are patur min a shvuah. So if you want to bring the bigger chiddush, you're going to show the party that is making the statement and taking the position that is much more difficult to understand. And we want to know how far that goes or the extent to which it goes. So showing how far his position goes is more valuable than telling us what the Rabbanan's position is and how far the Rabbanan go, because that would be the more natural position to take and the easier position to understand. Tashma, the end of our mission, it says, Tano kelim v'karkahot. If you made a claim for both utensils and land, hodah b'kelim v'kafar b'karkahot. If he admits to the utensils but denies the karka, b'karkahot v'kafar b'kelim, he admits to the karka but denies the utensils, patur, in both those cases, he is not considered to be a modeh b'miksat. Hodeh b'miksat karkot patur. If he admits to a portion of the karka, he still remains patur. That's because karka is not relevant by modeh b'miksat. The Baal Yad Tosafot point out that it's necessary over here to mention the miksat karkot, because that teaches you the reasoning behind the patur here is because it's the karka, which there is no modeh b'miksat or shvuah by, as opposed to saying that the reason that you are patur in the earlier two cases is because it's a case of Tano Chitim B'Seorim, and only admitted to one. And that's what the patur is. The next line in that Mishnah tells you that that's not the reasoning. The reasoning here has to do with Karkaot, and that draws the inference that is supportive of Shmuel's position in the end. B'Miksat Kelim, on the other hand, if he admits to owing a portion of the utensils, Chayav, then he is Chayav from Odeh B'Miksat. Taima de Kelim V'Karkaot, the reason there is because it's a mix of Kelim and Karkaot. The karka lav bat shvuahi. But that is because karka doesn't have any shvuah involved with it. Ha kelim vik kelim. If it was a case where he made a claim for one type of utensil and another type of utensil, dumya de kelim vikarko, similar to kelim in the karko, which means you have two different items, chayav, you would have been modeh b'miksat, and that would be considered chayav. Again, that's supportive of Shmuel's view over here, that when you have two items that are in the claim, if you admit to one and deny the other, that's considered to be modeh b'miksat. It seems that our Mishnah says the whole failure in the case of kelim and karkaot is because karkaot are considered to be outside the realm of shvuah, outside the realm of modeh b'miksat. For that reason, it failed. But that implies if it wasn't karkaot, but it was other kelim, you could have had a modeh b'miksat there, and that's supportive of Shmuel's position. Where it says, huadin, tafilu kelim v'kelim nami potur. Now, even if you had kelim and kelim, it would be patur. V'hadiktani kelim v'karkaot. So then why did the Mishnah give the example of kelim v'karkaot? If you could have done kelim v'kelim, it would have been a bigger chiddush to say there that there's no modeh b'miksat. Kamash malan. Dechi hodeh b'miksat kelim, chayav af al karkaot. when he emits to a portion of the utensils, that mode of mitzvah makes him not only chayav take a shvuah on the kelim, he also through a gilgul will take now a shvuah on the karka. So now that he already is chayav a shvuah in the case, that will draw in a shvuah on the karka as well. Maika mashmalan, what is that coming to teach us? The idea of zokikin. So Rashi explains that zokikim here means that the kelim zokikim et hakarka od shvuah, that they cause or they drag along the karka for the shvuah. It means that one item can pull the other item. That's what Rashi says. The kelim compel the karka to have a shvuah taken about it. Others say zokikim is not the item, the utensils dragging along the karka, but rather Beit Din imposes. Zokikim is a reference to Beit Din imposes upon him a shvuah. Because of the kelim, Beit Din now requires him, they demand of him, to give a shvuah with regards to the karkaot. Gemara says, Tanina, why do we need you to tell us that? That it's an explicit mishnah in Kiddushin. Zokikin et nechasim sheyesh lehem achariyut lishivah lehem. That the nechasim that don't have achrayut, which is kelim, force a shvuah on the items that have achrayut. Over there, the Mishnah is dealing with the differences between karka and kelim. And sometimes the karka helps you do things for the kelim, and sometimes the kelim help you do some things for the karka. The karka helps because you can make a kinyan of kesef, shtar, and chazakah on karka. And agav the karka, you can make a kinyan on the kelim. And vice versa. You can only take a shvuah on kelim, not on karka. But if you're compelled to take a shvuah on the kelim, it will also force you to take it on the karka. But that's explicit in the Mishnah in Kiddushin. Our answer is ha ikar. Our Mishnah here is the main area for this sugya. This is Masechet Shvuot. The fact that you're speaking about a shvuah, this is the main location. This is where it should be written. Hahi agav grora nasba. The fact that it's mentioned in Kiddushin has nothing to do topically with what's going on there, but rather it's because of the kinyanim. There it's speaking about kinyan. Agav, it's speaking about kinyan. It tells you, oh, it happens to be that there's this other item that works between kelim and karka, and that's shvuah. So that's brought down as a sidebar in Kiddushin. This is the main place, and that's why it's mentioned over here, and that's why it's not a question why it's mentioned in Kiddushin. Kiddushin's not the main sugya. This is the main sugya. And it's mentioned over here to teach you this din. And by teaching you this din, you can't draw any inferences from the Mishnah, because it used kelim and karka to teach you this din, not to tell you that kelim v'kelim would be different. Rabbi Chiya Barava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So now you have the opposing position to Shmuel, which is Rabbi Chiya Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tano Chitim Bisorim, V'odulu V'achat Mehem Patur. He makes a claim for both Chitin and Sorim, and admits to one and denies the other. That's not Modeh V'miksat, and you are Patur. This is against Shmuel's position. But V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak Yasher, didn't Rabbi Yitzchak say Shkoyach on what you did? V'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan agrees with you. Well, how can Rabbi Yochanan agree with you if Rabbi Yochanan has the exact opposite position? That's what we're saying over here. Amorayim Ninu Alibid Rabbi Yochanan. Makloket Amorayim as to what Rabbi Yochanan's position is. Rabbi Yitzchak believes Rabbi Yochanan's position is aligned with what we saw in Shmuel before. Chir Bava thinks that Rabbi Yochanan's position is against that which Shmuel said earlier. Tashma, so now the Gemara is going to bring the same questions we brought from the Mishnah before. They were in support of Shmuel. In the end, we answer they're not really in support. Here we do the opposite. We're going to say these are questions on Rabbi Yochanan's position. And then we're going to, each case, we're going to answer on behalf of Rabbi Yochanan the same way we answered before. Just Tashma, Tanochi, Timo, Dodo, Visorim, Patur. The reason there that the Chachamim say you are patur is because the claim was for wheat and the admission was in barley. Had it been both chitin and sorim, and he admitted to one of them, chayav. Gemara answers again, even if he made a claim for both of them, the Chachamim over there would say patur. So then why did the Mishnah give the example of chitim versus seorim and not chitim and seorim? To show you how far the position of Rabban Gamliel goes. Again, the same question that we had before, Tashma, Tanu Kelim v'Karkaot. If he created a claim for Kelim and Karka, V'odu b'Kelim v'Kafar b'Karkaot, he admitted to the Kelim but denied the Karka. V'Karkaot v'Kafar b'Kelim, he admitted to the Karka or denied the Kelim. Patur. In all those cases, you patur modu miksat, because karka is not relevant there. Hode b'miksat karka. If he admitted to a portion of the karka, he's still patur, because there's no modu b'miksat in karka. B'miksat kelim, if he admits to a portion of the kelim, chayav, that's considered to be modu b'miksat. Taima de kelim v'karkaot. Again, the way that you would read the Mishnah is the failure over there is because you have kelim and karkaot are mufka from the din of shvua, mufka from the din of modu b'miksat. The karkala bat shvuahi, ha kelim v'kelim. Had it been kelim v'kelim, domya to kelim v'karkaot, similar to the case of kelim v'karkaot, which means they have different kelim, chayav. We would have said you're chayav. And therefore, that would again be a proof to Shmuel's position, and I question now on Rabbi Yochanan's position. My answer, like an answer before, hu adin dafilu kelim bekelim nami patur. That even kelim bekelim would be patur. So then, why does the Mishnah give the example of karka and kelim? Vakamashmalan dodev mixa kelim chayav avla kafak karkot. And when you do modev mixa in the kelim, that draws along a shvua, not only for the kelim but also for the karkot. My kamashmalan, what's that teaching you? Zokakin. It's teaching you this din of zokakin. Tanina. We already have that in explicit Mishnah and Kiddushin. So, ha-ikar. Our Mishnah here is the ikar. Hahi agav grora nasba. That in Kiddushin is brought down as a sidebar. And therefore, you can't ask a question from that about why our Mishnah needed to mention it. Our Mishnah needed to mention it because this is the main sugya of Shvua. Again, it's the same thing that we did before from our Mishnah. We tried to bring proofs to Shmuel, and we answered they're not proofs. Over here, there are questions on Rabbi Yochanan's position, and we say in the end, they're not questions. Eight vei Rabbi Abba bar Marmel, Rabbi Chia Baba. Tano shor, v'odu lo b'seh. He made a claim for a shor, and the guy admits to a seh. Seh, v'odu lo b'shor. He made a claim for a seh, and he admits to a shor. Patur. There's no mode of a mixer here. You're dealing with different animals. You're talking about an ox versus a sheep. Over there, they have nothing to do with each other. Tano b'shor, v'seh. If he made a claim for both an ox and a seh, v'hodu lo be'achad me'en, and he admits to one of them, chayav. That sounds exactly like Shmuel's position, where chitin and tzorim are considered to be modev v'miksat. And against Rabbi Yochanan's position over here, amalei, hamani, rabban gamliohi. Says that's not a question of Rabbi Yochanan, that's Rabbi Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel believes that you don't need the hoda'ah to be miminatana. He says, wait a minute, Rabban Gamliel, afila reishanami. If Rabban Gamliel is the author of that position, why in the first case where you made a claim for a shor and you admitted to a seh, are you not chayav? According to Gamliel, there's no need for the admission to be a subset of the claim. That means that even in the case of shor and seh, not shor and seh, and then you admit to one of the two animals, even when you make a claim for a shor and admit to a seh, according to Rabban Gamliel, that should be modeh b'miksat. Elaha mani admon hi. The author of that brayta must be admon. Who we know from the Gemara in Ketubot, that he believes that even though you need hodah miminatana, so he disagrees with Rabbi Gamliel's position, but nevertheless, he does believe that when you have two items and you admit to one, that that is classified as modeh b'miksat. And so what Rabbi Chiya Baba is saying, that bright that you just brought down about shor and seh, that's authored by Admon. I'm speaking about the Chachamim. You're speaking about Admon, so you can't tell me that that bright is a disproof to what Rabbi Yochanan said about chitin and tzeorim. V'lo duchuy midachinan lecha. And he says, I'm not just telling you some story and making it up that Admon's the author of that braita. El tamud aruchu mipiv she Rabbi Yochanan hamani Admoni. I actually heard that directly from Rabbi Yochanan, that the author of that braita is Admon, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan didn't think it was proof positive that when you have two items and you admit to one and deny the other, that that's modeh b'miksat. He says, that braita is according to Admon. We don't hold like Admon, we hold like the Chachamim. And therefore, my position where I say that it doesn't work and it's not modeh b'miksat is in the position of the Chachamim. Just to note here that the Gemara in Ketubot has a different conclusion than what's written over here. And there, Rabbi Chiya Baba actually has the totally opposite position than what he has over here. So the Balei Tosafot, Kedarkam Bakodesh, try to reconcile between the Gemara in Ketubot and the Gemara over here. Other Rishonim, Ramban and others say that these are what's called misugyot ha-mitchalfot. Sugyot and shas, where we have a sugya and the positions are completely flipped. Or that an amora will say one thing in one place and say the exact opposite in another place. The Balei Tosafot themselves bring that up in a number of places and point out that we have sugyot and shas, where Abaye and Rava's positions are flipped. That even though it's the exact same sugya, but in one sugya Abaye and Rava are this way, and the other sugya, they're just the opposite. That's what they call misugyot ha-mitchalfot. So other Rishonim say that this is similar when comparing it to Ketubot. Balei Tosafot try to reconcile between that which is said in Ketubot and versus what is said here by Rabbi Chiya Baba. Amar Rav Anan Amar Shmuel, Tano chitim v'kadam v'hodu lo b'seurim. If the person comes and makes a claim for chitim, he says, you owe me chitim, the guy jumps the gun and says, I owe you still Urim. The guy wanted to make a claim that involved both items. He would have said, you owe me Chitin and Se'orim. Had he waited to the end and then admitted to the Se'orim, he would have been a Modeh B'Miksat. What he does is he jumps the gun after the guy makes the claim for the wheat and says, I owe you barley. But that's not Modeh B'Miksat because his admission has nothing to do with the claim that was brought against him. Question is he only doing that preemptively to stop him having Chayav and Modeh B'Miksat? Or is he doing it innocently? Shmuel says, Im kim arim, if he is trying to trick or doing this subversively in order to get out of Modeh B'Miksat, Chayav, we're still going to make him Chayav in a Shvat Modeh B'Miksat. Im mitkavein, if he's just doing it because that's what he thought was being said over here, he is patur. So if he's doing it seriously and not as a trick, then we're not going to make him take a shua of Modeh B'Miksat. The question is, how do you know? How do you know when he is cheating or jumping the gun? And how do you know when he is just saying it as a response? So what many of the Rishonim point out is it's a difference between whether he cuts the other guy off. He begins a statement about, you owe me chitim, and he's about to say another word, and the guy jumps in and says, I owe you still rim. That's kimer ma'arim, because he doesn't let the other guy finish. He cuts him off in the middle of his statement. Then if the other guy finishes his statement, you owe me chitim, he says, no, I don't owe you chitim, I owe you still rim. The guy goes, well, you also owe me still rim. In that case, it's not going to be Modeh B'Miksat, and we're not going to even think that he was trying to jump the gun and cut off Modeh B'Miksat because the other guy stopped. He made a claim and waited for a response. When he waited for a response, he got a response. And then when he continues to make the claim afterwards, that's not related to the admission here, and it won't be considered Modeh B'Miksat. V'amar Rav Anan, Amar Shmuel, Ta'ano Shtei Machatin, V'hodo Lo B'Achat Mehem. He made a claim for two needles, two sewing needles, and he admits to one of them, Chayav. That is Modeh B'Miksat. V'fikach Yatzu Kelim L'Mashein. Because Kelim are in their own category. Now, this presents a serious problem because a needle or a stitching sewing needle does not have the requisite minimum value that you require of Shtei Kesef. So how is it over here when he says you claim for two kelim and you deny one and admit to one? Why is that considered to be a Modeh B'Miksat? So what the Gemara says over here is kelim have a unique standing. This is the Girsa of Rashi. It relates actually to a machloka between Rashi and the other Rishonim on the previous daf, which is, how do you view the pasuk? When the pasuk says, ki tein isha re'eu kesef o kelim, so the pasuk says kesef, which is in the singular, and kelim in the plural. And we learned in yesterday's daf that there is a parallel between the kesef and the kelim. Ma kelim shtayim, so too kesef shtayim. That's how we knew that kesef was shtei ma'a kesef, the minimum. Then the Gemara over there also says, ma kesef chashuv. So Rashi's girsa in the Gemara there, and his belief over here is, ma kesef chashuv, just like kesef is chashuv, af kol davar chashuv. So too everything else has to be an item of significance. But what Rashi notes is, kelim don't have to be significant. By the mere fact that they are kelim, gives them significance. And therefore they meet the threshold of significance just because they are a kli. So in the Gemara over there says the limud of kesef and kelim, says, well, kelim teach you two, and kesef now needs to be two. Kesef teaches you davar chashuv, which applies to everything besides kelim. Because the pasuk says kelim are inherently chashuv. That's what the Gemara is saying here. Why did the Torah mention the word kelim at all? There's nothing that you learn from kelim that is important according to Rashi. Say a minimum of two, then let's just have the Torah say ksafim or shtei kesef, and you would have had the same limud even without the kelim or the word kelim appearing in the Torah. The fact that the word kelim appears in the Torah therefore teaches you that kelim have significance irrespective of their value. And that means two sewing needles, if you admit to one and deny one, that's going to qualify as Modeh B'Miksat. And they don't have to meet the minimum threshold of Shtei Kesef. The other Rishonim disagree with Rashi because they believe that when it says Ma Kesef Davar Chashuv, they don't say Af Davar Acher Chashuv, they say Af Kelim Davar Chashuv. So too a Kli must be a Davar Chashuv. And you can see that on the Tosfot on the Lamed Tet Amud Bet where he quotes the Yushalmi, which is Achanai Merminim B'Yushalmi D'Tano Shtei Machatim Tzrich Shei Shavin Bet Prutot. They have to have a minimum value. Shiteya kfira pruta, vahoda pruta. Vahoda makshina and kesef the kelim. And then they have Ekeshrin, Kesef Mekelif, Latzich Kesef Yoter Mipruta, Dema Kelim, Delav Koldo, just like Kelim are not anything, Ela Kli Chashuv, they have significance, Av Kesef Lav Koldo, so do the Kesef has to have significance, Ela Kesef Chashuv, Dainu Ma'a, it has to be a minimum of a Kesef Chashuv, which is a Ma'a, Kach Eish Chashivot, Vashein Tzarech Le'agia, and therefore you don't have to change the Girsa on the Gemara over here, the way that Rashi changed the gears on yesterday's daf, because of what Shmuel says later on, and therefore it's good what we said. That by kelim you require a minimum value, and the mashain that Shmuel says later on, even though they don't meet the minimum of shtei ma'ot, but they still have to meet the minimum of shtei prutot. And that way, kesef teaches you that it has to be a davar chashuv, and a davar chashuv by a kli is a pruta. And then once you have by the kelim that it's not enough that it's a minimal amount, but there is a threshold, what is that minimal threshold when you throw it back on the kesef? You need shtei kesef, but shtei kesef of chashivut, which means a minimum of shtei ma'ot. So now, Amar of Papa, tano kelim upruta, vode bekelim. Person makes a claim for kelim and a pruta, and then admits to the kelim, v'kafar bepruta, and only denies a kapruta, patur. There is patur, because he doesn't mean the minimum threshold of kfira. Hode bepruta, if he admits to the pruta, v'kafar bekelim, but denies the kelim, chayav. That is chayav. So Gemara says, first of all, chada karav. It's clear that the ratio is like rav, which is when you have a denial of a pruta, that's not sufficient to make you chayav and moda mitzvah. You need a minimum of shneima kesef to be chayav. You need a kfira of shneima kesef. V'chada kishmuel, and the latter part of that statement is like Shmuel, where it says, chada derav damar kfira tana shtei kesef. The ratio is like rav because there's a demand for a minimum denial of shtei kesef. V'chada kishmuel, the latter part is like Shmuel, damar tano chitim v'se'orim v'hodu lo b'achat me'en chayav. If you make a claim for two items, and you admit to one of them and deny the other, that you are chayav. So that's Shmuel's position, that both kelim are considered to be significant, number one. And number two is that if you make a claim for two items, deny one, admit to one, that's considered to be a modeh b'miksat. Even though you have two separate items, and you're admitting completely to one, and denying completely the other, that's still considered to be modeh b'miksat. If you look in the Baya Tosafot, v'chadak yishmuel v'chein olocha. The halacha is this way. Even though in general, when you have a machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. When you have a machloket Rav and Shmuel, the halacha is like Rav Bisurei, the halacha is like Shmuel Bimamonanit. If you have a machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Rav, halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. In addition, Rabbi Yochanan's position trumps that of Shmuel. Over here we had Rabbi Yochanan arguing on Shmuel. So why are we paskening like Shmuel, chada, de Rabbi Yochanan nami chayav alibet achad amora. That's because we're not sure about Rabbi Yochanan's position. We had a machloka between Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Chira Abba as what Rabbi Yochanan's position is. And according to Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Shmuel. So that's number one. Vote, de kaimelon karav Nachman bidine. The next thing is that Rabbi Nachman carries extra weight in dinim. We have a principle that whenever it comes to dinim and Rabbi Nachman proffers an opinion, we pass him like him, because he was a dayan, and since he was a dayan and a significant dayan, he carries extra weight with that. And over here, Rabbi Nachman is the one who brings Shmuel's position. I'm Rabbi Nachman, I'm Shmuel. Shmuel's position is brought in the name of Rabbi Nachman, so that shows you another reason. And the last reason the Baal Tosfot to say is, our Gemara over here ended with Amar Rav Papa. That last case that we brought was authored by Rav Papa, and Rav Papa is a Batra. He's after Rava. He's a Talmud of Rava. And we have a principle that the halacha is ke Batra. And when you have later Amoraim, that's after basically Rava and later, then if you have an Amora that takes the position, the halacha is like him because they had the advantage of seeing all the positions before them, and they came to a conclusion. So Rav Papa is also a Batra, Svir Leik Shmuel, and he passed in just now like Shmuel. So you have three reasons why you would pass him like Shmuel. So one is that Rabbi Yochanan might have agreed with Shmuel. Number two is Rav Nachman backs up the position of Shmuel. Number three is Rav Papa, who's a Batra, also passes like Shmuel. says, V'chein, Perish Rabbeinu Chananel, B'Shemaitin, Rabbeinu Chananel agrees, V'chein Ikar. V'lo k'mo shepasak Rabbeinu Chananel b'ktubot. And not like Rabbeinu Chananel paskin k'tubot, k'r Rabbi Chiya b'Abba. Where he paskins like Rabbi Chiya b'Abba, and that goes back to the problem in the previous Tosafot, which is how do you reconcile with that Gemara in k'tubot, where Rabbi Chiya b'Abba has the opposite position that he has over here, and then how do you reconcile or deal with that? And that comes to this question, that reconciliation here that Bali Tosafot would say, don't listen to Rabbeinu Chananel over there, listen to him over here, where he paskins like Shmuel. Okay, mana li biyadecha, in the chabi yadi patur. The Mishnah says, if he's a kofer bakol, no shvua. Amrav Nachman, umashbin oto, shvuat heseit. Here is the introduction of a later shvua, a shvuat derabanan, which is the shvuat heseit. My taima, what's the reason? Chazaka in Adam Toveya, ilimikain yeshlo alav. The reason is because a person doesn't come and make a willy-nilly claim. A person makes a claim because he has something outstanding. And the reason he's coming to make a claim is because he has something outstanding. The Gemara says, Adarabba, Chazaka in Adam is panav bifnei bal chovo. A person does not take a position of denial when his creditor is standing there. Again, we had a machloket. Rashi believes that's because he did him a tova and lent him the money. He's too embarrassed to deny the whole thing. Or, according to the Baal Yom Tosafot, the reason is because a person doesn't lie to the face of the person who knows the truth. A person will lie or alter the truth when the person on the other side doesn't know. But if the guy knows for sure, he's not going to lie to his face. So for either one of those reasons, the debtor is not going to make a kofer bakol, make a complete denial. Elaim Kain, he's telling the truth. And if he's telling the truth, he should be patur. So yeah, you have two chazakot facing off against each other. One is the chazaka that a person only makes a claim when there's something outstanding. He doesn't just make up claims. And the second one is a person only will be kofer bakol if they really do believe that they owe nothing because they'd be too afraid, too embarrassed to lie completely and deny the claim. Mar says, Ishtemutehu de kamishtamitle, Savad Avahavile Uparanale. Says no, that Kofar Bakol, yes, there is a chazaka that he doesn't deny it, but over here he's trying to escape from having to pay it and says, basically I'll deny it temporarily and then I will pay it back later. Teda. So I'll just prove to you that that's the case. Amaravidi Brahvin, Amarav Chista. A kofer b'milve kasher. Someone who denies owing money in a creditor-debtor relationship, kasher le'edut. He's still kasher as an aid. Kofer b'pikadon, if a person denies a pikadon, pasul le'edut. He's no longer valid to be an aid. So here, the difference between milve and pikadon is, by the case of a loan, it's very possible that the guy doesn't have the money to pay it back. He's trying to slip out of anything to pay it back. And he's doing it not because he wants to lie, not because he is a liar in general, not a reasonable person, or not a believable, trustworthy individual. It's simply that he doesn't have the money now. And so the only reason he's put under pressure to lie is because he wants to escape from having to pay back when he can't pay back. On the other hand, if you have a pikadon that is deposited with you, then there's no reason for you to lie about this. Somebody deposited something with you, you have to return it to them. You didn't borrow the item, it wasn't yours to use it anyway. You have to give it back to him. Now, all this is dependent on Edim seeing him in possession of the pikadon. Because then he can't make the claim that I don't have it, and he also can't make the claim that, oh, I forgot about it. The Edim give testimony to the fact that he knew about it, he had it in his hand, he's well aware of where it was, and then he's pasul de edut. On the other hand, if the Edim can't testify to that fact, then it's almost not different than a milveh. He might think, oh my gosh, I lost the pikadon. Let me lie about it until I can find the pikadon and return it to him. And that would be the same idea that the person wouldn't learn his trustworthiness under that. As Tosafot points out, that mukila de nakitu lebiyode, that they didn't see him holding the actual pikadon, ubimilve afilu nokile biyode zuze kasher. But by the creditor-debtor relationship where he denies owing the money, even if he has money in hand, he's still considered to be kasher. The milveh lo tzanit navu, shema tzarich lemaot. Because a milveh is given to use the money to spend the money, and maybe the money in hand he owes to someone else, or he has to pay for something else, and you have no idea why he's trying to escape from this creditor right now, and what type of pressure he's under in order to repay. And therefore he's trying to slip out of the repayment temporarily, he's not compromising his integrity. What you see here is that the reason a person is kofer bakol or makes a denial is to escape payment, not because they're not trustworthy. And therefore, Kofar Bakol also has this aspect of slipping out. And even though we've already said that the whole idea of modav b'miksad is because the person is trying to slip out of payment, and that's why he admits to a portion, then how do we explain here that if Kofar Bakol is also slipping out, then why don't you have a migo to believe him when it is modav b'miksad? If he could have denied the whole thing to slip out of it and he admits to a portion it, we should believe him. So here the Balei Tosafot introduced the idea that still it's less likely that he would be mishtemute through Kofar Bakol than modav b'miksad. And therefore it's not an option for him to be Kofar Bakol necessarily, because he's less likely to deny it face to face to the creditor, either for the reason of Rashi or the Balei Tosafot. But given that, you don't have a migo to believe him by modav b'miksad, because Kofar Bakol is not a great option for him. And usually amigo involves two equal options where he had a better claim and he didn't make it. Over here he could have made the claim of Kofar Bakol. What Tosafot says is it's less likely, or it's not a better claim. It's easier for him to be modav b'miksad than Kofar Bakol. Mana lebi adecha. Person says, you owe me 100 zuz. Amar lo, hein. He says, yes, I do owe you 100 zuz. The machar amar lo, it's neoli. Next morning he goes and says to him, listen, pay me back the money you admitted to yesterday. He says, natati lecha, I gave it to you already. Patur. Your patur. V'amar Rav Nachman, mashpin oto, shvat eseit. In that case, we make him take a shvat eseit. This is Rav Nachman, the shita do, that by Kofar Bakol, you have to take a shvat eseit. Man, the matni aresha. The first time that we brought Rav Nachman down was in the case of Mani Levi Adecha, and he makes the denial. He's a Kofar Bakol straight up to him. Guy says, you owe me 100 zuz. The guy says, no way, I don't owe you a penny. That's where Rav Nachman says shvat eseit. The one who says it there, Kosha Kena Seifa, certainly says it on this case as well, where he admitted to owing the money, and then later on says, I paid you back already, so there for sure he's going to demand a Shvat Eseit. Man demandi la Seifa, the one who has it on the Seifa, meaning the case where he admitted to the money first, and then only afterwards says, I paid you back, that's where Rav Nachman says you take a Shvat Eseit. Hachoho de'ika drorer de mamona. That is only because there is circumstantial evidence that he owes the money. He admitted to owing the money. Then he says, oh, I paid it back. There already there's more questions about his reliability in the case, and that's why you would force him to take a shvat haseit. But if up front he denied it completely, patam deleka drother de mamona, there's no circumstantial evidence, lo. Then we would not force him to take a shvat haseit. That's a machloket here in Rav Nachman's position. In order to take a shvat haseit, do you need drorer de mamona? Do you need some other item which gives circumstantial evidence to the fact that you owe money over here? And that's the way that the Rabbeinu Chananel explains it over here, when he says, de'ika drorer de mamona, perush ikar, that there's ikar mamon, da'o dolo mikodem, because you already admitted to owing the principal amount over here. And that is the circumstantial evidence in this case. The other hand, in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, on Daf Bet Amud Bet, Rashi over there says that Dror de Mamona is Chisaron Mamon. That if the case is closed in this way, or we don't address the matter, that somebody's going to lose out money over here, and therefore that's called Dror de Mamona. Over here it's hard to differentiate between the two cases in there being Dror de Mamona. In both cases there is a Chisaron, because denying the claim of the other party. The Balei Tosafot over there in Bava Metzia claimed that Dror de Mamona is that the case would have existed even without the claim here. The Safek would have existed even if neither of the parties brought the claim to bear. Over here again, it's hard to argue that that's Dror de Mamona over here, because here the claim is what generates the whole problem. The creditor is making a claim. It's not that the Safek or the doubt or the problem exists without the claim. The claim is what generates the problem over here. And therefore, it seems most likely that the Dror de Mamona over here is like what the Rabbeinu Chananel says, which it is circumstantial evidence. And over here, the Balei Tosafot say, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Hashlo it mayuchata kehad mihanach lishne. The Gemara never concludes about which Lashon is the right one, whether it's on the ratio of the Seifa. Heicha deleka Dror de Mamona, therefore if there is no Dror de Mamona, lo mashbin le misafek. We do not make him take a shvah misafek, ta motzi michavero, Alav Araya. V'af al pikein, lo ya moche b'dayanim ha-mashbi'im. Rabbeinu Tam would not stop dayanim that did impose a shvua when there was no Dror de Mamona. Tzanira lashbia. He says there seems to be a reason to be mashbia. De'ika d'amre tafel l'lashon rishon. And whenever you have an ika d'amre in the Gemara, that is subordinate to the first lashon. And the first Lashon does not demand Dror de Mamona. Kamo Shomer Riva, like the Riva says, whenever you have an Ikadamre, the first Lashon is more powerful. Miu, Orenu Reinu Tam, Dazlin and Batar Amekil. Whenever you have an Ikadamre, we follow whichever one is the more lenient opinion. And over here, the more lenient opinion is to say that there is a need for Dror de Mamona. And then the Bali Tosafot in the end, Savior of Haigon, Perish, Dolo Mashbinenle, Ella, Mishamtinenle, Al Tnai. Shehei Bishamta, Imuchaya, Veinu Mishalim. Rabbi brings up here that we don't make him take a Shavu'ah, but rather we put him into excommunication. And that goes back to what we saw at the end of Lamed Chet Amud Bet, where Rashi says that at the time of the Gonim, they started to drop the Shavu'ah in general, and they switched over to the Klala, or to the Shamta, because of the problems that arose from what we saw in the Daf on Shabbat on Lamed Tet, which is the tremendous punishment and problems that arise from a Shvuat Sheker, how it affects not only the individual, but the whole world, and that it's Lo Yinakeh, as opposed to other mitzvot where you have Yinakeh. And so therefore the Chachamim suspended using Shvuah as the mechanism, because they saw people were lying under oath, and they believed there wasn't a valuable mechanism anymore. In general, we'll have to speak about it, and we'll postpone this till tomorrow. Shvuat Haseit, the application, the breadth of application, the reason for the institution of Shvuat Haseit, but we'll do that when we begin the daf tomorrow. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph.